Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NWA Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Lowther, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The NWA Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of NucleCast. Of course, I am your host, Adam Lowther, and today we're talking about a topic we've never discussed before. We're going to talk about Japan's views on strategic issues and, you know, would Japan ever go nuclear and interesting topics like that. And to do that, we've got a great guest. Of course, I'm talking about Dr. Satoru Nagao, who is a non-resident fellow at the Hudson Institute. And he lives, of course, in Tokyo. And so he's in a great place, and he's got a great job, and he writes on U.S. and Japanese and Indian strategic issues and the Indo-Pacific. And so he's the perfect person to have on NucleCast to talk about these issues. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. It is a great honor for me. I love the United States, and of course, I love my country, and of course, now the India is also the part of our corporate strategic framework. So that's why it is honor for me to talk about this.
Well, so, you know, you write about this quite a bit in publications, English language publications, so folks can go read your work. But let me just sort of give you a softball question to open this up. So can you walk me through how you think Japan looks to China, looks to the rest of the Indo-Pacific, and then looks, you know, west to the Americans? How is Japan looking at the current strategic competition, and what is it thinking?
Yes, that's a very important question. Indeed, Japan focusing on the concept of the Indo-Pacific and the Quad. Why is a very important part of explanation in this case? Prime Minister Shinzo Abe addressed in the Indian Parliament in 2007. That was the starting point of this idea of the Indo-Pacific and the Quad as an official statement from Japan. Address, the title is Confluence of Two Seas. So Confluence of the Pacific Ocean and Indian Ocean, that's why the two seas. But at the same time, this address also includes the cooperation with US and Australia. So that's why this is the address of the Indo-Pacific at the same time addressed about the Quad. So why are we focusing on? Indeed, that is one information. Another information source is he published another article in 2012, which is Asia's Democratic Security Diamond. It is easy to expect this is Quad. And he mentioned about China, how important the cooperation of four countries. So that's why view from this two source, Confluence of Two Seas address and article published in 2012. Indeed, one day before he sworn in as a prime minister, that article published. So that's why from two information source, what can I say? There are three reasons Japan focusing on Indo-Pacific and Quad. Firstly, the view from the economy, view from the world politics, this region is rising and a new concept is needed, which include both Pacific Ocean side and the Indian Ocean side. But another reason is China's influence is growing and there is a risk. This region, this rising region, could be the China-dominated region. So that's why third reason is important. This Indo-Pacific try to include India as a newcomer to maintain balance. Why I can say? Because you can imagine the concept in the past is Asia-Pacific. Indeed, Asia-Pacific is focusing on Pacific side mainly. But this Asia Pacific do not include all of the territorial issue of China. But because China has a territorial issue with India and Bhutan, that part is Indian Ocean side. So if we talk about Indo-Pacific, we can include all of the territorial issue around China. And another one is the Quad. Indeed, Quad is a group of the influential country in the Indo-Pacific, except China. So that's why this concept is also the part of counter-China strategy. So both Indo-Pacific and Quad are counter-China strategy. But the difference is India. Asia-Pacific focusing on the Pacific side, but Indo-Pacific include Indian Ocean side also. So that's why cooperate with, including India in the US side, US, Japan, and Australia. Japan is ally of the United States. Australia is ally of the United States. So these three is already formed as allied partners. But India is newcomer. So try to include India and form the Quad in the Indo-Pacific to deal with all of the territorial issue with China. That is the Indo-Pacific and Quad. So since the 2007, Japan has continued to improve this concept. Indo-Pacific strategy, Indo-Pacific something, 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 and every time focusing on Quad.
Right.
Even if the security cooperation, bilateral base, but every time partner is, of course, United States, and another one is Australia and India. So that is Japan's perception. We need to deal with China. And in this case, Quad is important. And Quad is important in the Indo-Pacific. That is the strategic idea of Japan.
So let me ask you, let me jump in here. One country you haven't mentioned that seems to be a growing partner for Japan is, of course, South Korea. I know this is one of the things President Yoon was focusing on, was improving relations between Japan and South Korea. And it seems that for both Japan and South Korea, that you're both concerned deeply about China's rise and what seems to be, at least to an American audience, it seems that China is becoming increasingly assertive and aggressive. Is that the same perception in Japan, or are we creating a monster in China that for those who live in the region don't see it that way?
In case of the Japan-Korea cooperation, South Korea in this case, is related with the situation of the North Korea issue. Because when we talk about how to deal with China in the Indo-Pacific, indeed, South Korea is relatively land-based land power, and not naval power mainly. So that's why when we talk about security, maritime security, indeed South Korea hasn't been the main actor in the past. But how to deal with China has aspect of the Korean Peninsula issue. North Korea is just located just side of Beijing, and they are the gatekeeper of the security of the Beijing. So that's why, how to deal with the Korean Peninsula, security in the Korean Peninsula is one of the important part of the Indo-Pacific security. For example, if China try to invade Taiwan, they can collaborate with North Korea. And firstly, North Korea push South Korea or Japan, by rising tension and the main military forces focusing on the Korean Peninsula. During that time, China started to invade Taiwan. But such kind of the scenario we expect. In this case, we cannot separate Korean Peninsula issue and the Taiwan security issue. So that's why when we talk about Indo-Pacific maritime security, indeed, as a part of this security strategic framework, we cannot ignore the Korean Peninsula issue. In this case, how to deal with North Korea? Of course, South Korea's role is very important. So to deal with North Korea, Japan should cooperate with South Korea. Of course, US is main actor, but South Korea is also important. The problem is there is a historical issue or territorial issue between Japan and South Korea. So that's why always this could be the one of the rift of the discorporation. Yeah. So in front of the United States, both Japan and South Korea try to show the good smile. But indeed, between the South Korea and Japan, there is some rift, and sometimes we remember this issue and the problem has happened. So yeah. That's why this cooperation is important. But at the same time, the both Japan and South Korea take distance a little and keep this distance, indeed. So that is very healthy between both of us, we believe.
Yeah.
But anyway, but about the counter-China strategy is different aspect, and I need to explain that one as a part of the how important the Pacific one. If possible, I want to continue a little. Is it
sure.
possible?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Because why Quad is so important? Why this is related to the pattern of the China's provocation in the other area, not Korean Peninsula, but mainly the. But East Yellow Sea is also part of it, but anyway, the other part of the maritime area, especially in South China Sea, what happened is indicating the pattern of China's territory expansion. In the South China Sea, in 1950s, when France withdrew from Vietnam or other Indochina Peninsula, that has happened. That timing, China occupies half of the Paracel Island. And in 1970s, U.S. withdrew from Vietnam after the Vietnam War. China took another half of the Paracel Island. In 1980s, Soviet troops located in Vietnam declined number drastically. That timing, China expand activity in the Spratly Island, then occupy six features. In 1990s, U.S. withdrew from Philippines. That time, China occupied Mystic Reef. So when the military balance has changed and it is China's favor, in this case, China tried to find the power vacuum and they found and occupied it. So that's why how to deal with China rely on how to maintain military balance which do not create a power vacuum. So China's strategy, some people say, looks like water. If water do not push the big rock, but water is penetrating the space. And if enough water fills places, of course, even if the big rock, they can move. This is strategy of water. Well, another person, like me say, I compare with Russia's aggression and China's aggression. Russia's pattern is burglar. If they find chances, they pull the gun and intimidate and use the gun to take the territory. This is the burglar type. But China's type is thief. Thief. They find something that no one touch, they steal it. That is China's pattern. So that's why.
So Russia's a burglar, and you know they're aggressive, and they'll take what they want, whereas the Chinese steal what nobody's looking at. That's a pretty good analogy. I like that. go ahead.
Yeah, so that's why how to maintain military balance is a matter. In this case, if Japan and ally with the United States and Australia, if this framework include India, what can we do? Indeed, view from China, all of them are neighbors. So that's why they need to divide their military expenditure multiple direction. Because view from Japan, India is backside. China's backside. So India-China border is the matter. If the tension lies in the Indian-China border, China cannot concentrate their resources in the eastern side. And China is focusing on security in the Indian Ocean because of their sea lane of communication is running in the Indian Ocean. So that's why China's Navy is deploying ships in the Indian Ocean. If Japan and the US need to deploy many ships in the Indian Ocean, they cannot deploy same ship in the Pacific side. But if India takes charge, we can do that. So that's why they're including India. And another one is Southeast Asia. Supporting Southeast Asia's security meaning that China need to share some resources against Southeast Asia. China cannot expand influence in Southeast Asia. In this case, not only the three countries, so US, Japan, Australia, if we include India, India can help them. Because in Southeast Asia, what happened is, because they do not have the enough money, they bought some weapon from Russia. But Russia, aftercare is very expensive. That's why they ask India about aftercare of Russian weapon. So training, maintenance, this one. That's why, view from Russia, Russia cannot get the income from aftercare. But at the same time, if India trains the military power in Southeast Asia, this is beneficial for the US and Japan, Australia side. Because we can collaborate. So that's why Japan focusing on Indo-Pacific and Quad with US and Australia, because including India taking the backside of China to maintain military balance. So how serious? How serious? That is only important matter. One information we need to include is last one decade, China built 148 ships. Inducted until the 2023, so 2014 to 2023, so a little not 2025, this is not the data, but 148 is nearly total number of the Japan Maritime Self-Defense Force, and it's my Japanese Navy, and the Indian Navy is the same size. So that's why one decade, China create one Navy, big Navy size, naval ships they inducted. So such kind of pace of building is a big threat for Japan, big threat for other neighbors, Southeast Asian neighbors or India. And of course, this will harm the U.S. interest, of course. Right. So that's why we need to deal with. We need to maintain military balance by cooperating these countries.
Yeah,
to divide multiple directions, divide China's budget multiple directions.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Now, it's that time in the show where we have to take a quick break. So, it's been an interesting discussion of the Quad, and I think we have a good sense now. Hey, the point of the Quad is to stretch the Chinese to where they have to cover both East and West, and so that makes sense. Because they can't flood the Pacific in front of the U.S. Navy. I mean, and for the Japanese, it's a similar concern. But now when we get back, I want to sort of turn internally to Japan. And I want to get your take on what are the Japanese fears and what are the Japanese concerns? And then ultimately, the big question we have to discuss before we're done is, the Japanese, I think it was the prime minister mentioned that, Japan may have to consider going nuclear at some point. And so I want to get to that point where how serious is Japan about thinking about, is it just nuclear submarines? Is it nuclear weapons? What is it? So you're listening to NucleCast, and we'll be right back.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the Amlaw Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
And we're back, and we're talking to Dr. Satoru Nagao. He's a non-resident fellow at the Hudson Institute, but he's in Tokyo. And so he covers Japan for the Hudson Institute. Okay, so I posed a question to you right before the break. So I'll let you, how are the Japanese thinking? What is it that they're concerned about?
Of course, China is becoming the great power which challenges U.S. interest. And Japan is U.S. size. That's why if China try to change the U.S. lead world order, that is not beneficial for Japan. That is Japan's concern. And if China's missile range will extend it and already covered all part of Japan, of course, but at the same time, China's Navy expand activity and provoke Japan too much. Under such kind of situation, Japan will face a very serious situation. we will not accept China lead the world, which is one kind of dictatorship, authoritarian regime. Japan is a democratic country which runs democracy from the United States. And China dominated Indo-Pacific is not acceptable for Japanese. So simply, that's clear. And indeed, in case of Japan, Japan is a super trustworthy ally of the United States, I believe, because of the realistic view. Of course, people who trust the United States, of course, they are majority in Japan. But even if Japanese people who do not trust the United States also support you to maintain the U.S. side. Because what kind of logic? The last 2,000 years, Japan has a history they believe, but only six years, Japan faced a foreign control, because Japan hasn't lost any war against a foreign country, except only one. So U.S. is stronger than Japan, is consensus in Japan. So that's why, from the Japan security, yes, we will not leave from the U.S. circle, because the U.S. is stronger than us, because we have already fought it, and we lost it. And China and Russia, we have already fought, but every time we won, but not the United States. U.S. is strong, no doubt. That is the Japan's perception. So if someone ask Japanese, if Japan need to fight with the United States, what will happen? Of course, without hesitation, Japanese will say, we will lost again. So that's why Japanese who trust the United States, which is, of course, well, they are majority, but of course support the Japan-US alliance. But at the same time, Japanese who do not trust the United States also support the US-Japan alliance. Yeah. Perfect ally in this case. So that's why if the China try to challenge the United States, Japan's response is very clear. We are U.S. side, and we will not accept China's rule.
Yeah, and China has tried that, right? I mean, we remember China has tried to invade Japan a couple of times, and fortunately, bad weather prevented it. So, you know, it's you know, one of the famous invasion attempts in Japanese history. And is there a deep concern that... you know, for me as an American who studies China, I see China as seeking to restore hegemony and, you know, a hierarchical system in which, in many respects, akin to what it had, you know, prior to the 19th century, in which, you know, the nations of Asia are going to, you know, they're going to kowtow to Beijing, and they're going to pay their respects to Beijing. And, you know, essentially they acknowledge that Beijing is, you know, sort of at the top of the pyramid, and then therefore they're subservient. Is, you know, as I talk to the South Koreans, they sort of say, hey, we've been subservient to the Chinese before. We don't want to do it again. Do the Japanese have a similar fear, or is there, you know, is that just sort of a Western view?
Okay. Japan hasn't experienced China's occupation. So that is a completely different with South Korea in this case. So that's why, indeed, Japanese hasn't accepted China is stronger than Japanese. That's the interesting part, because recently China's military modernization is a very rapid pace. Budget is far bigger than the Japan's defense budget. Equipment is very sophisticated. Even if under such kind of situation, still Japanese believe we can win. That is a little strange feeling. we do not have the confidence if we need to fight with the United States. I have already explained. Japanese say Japan will lost again. But in front of China, still Japanese believe we can win. Something like that. So completely different perception in this case. So that's why compare with other country who have experienced China's control, Japan is a little bit different. So Japan still believe we can maintain our independence and we should be the U.S. circle. So any situation will change always, but still consistently Japan try to be the U.S. side. That is fixed, I think. So with China challenge, Japanese will say, we will resist. So this is simple answer.
Okay, so let me get, before we run out of time, let me get to, you know, the burning question that everybody wants to know, and that is, you know, there was a recent discussion in Japan about nuclear weapons. Do you see the Japanese ever fielding their own nuclear weapons? Is there a circumstance, you know, I've wondered, well, if South Korea goes nuclear, would they build nuclear weapons? But then the North already has them, and Japan didn't go nuclear. Is there a circumstance in which Japan would say we have to build nuclear weapons?
If United States is allies with Japan, Japan do not need to possess a nuclear weapon. That is logic Japanese strongly believe. Under such a situation, the key is the U.S. policy, I believe. Because if the United States will not protect Japan, Japanese believe, in this case, Japan need to possess a nuclear weapon. But if under current situation, Japanese believe the U.S. will support Japan, nuclear umbrella is fixed, extended deterrence is fixed. So that's why there is no reason for Japanese to possess nuclear weapon. But view from Japanese, because of the we are feeling the situation is deteriorating, especially there is a possibility China will invade Taiwan. In this case, because of the situation, Japan need to join. Because if Japan will not join, this is not ally of the United States. And if China want to win, really want to win, China need to attack the U.S. base in Japan. In this case, Japan need to protect the U.S. base. So that's why, Japan need to join, we believe. So that's why under such kind of situation, we need the credibility of the U.S. extend nuclear deterrence. So that's why nuclear sharing, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe suggested nuclear sharing discussion with the United States. Why he started to talk about this issue? Because rising the credibility is needed, he believed.
Right.
But at the same time, this is not the meaning Japan will possess nuclear weapons themselves, because if Japan try to do this, there is a possibility it will harm the trust between U.S. and Japan. That is not Japan's interest. U.S. is special for Japan, and we do not harm any part of the relation between two. So that's why will Japan possess a nuclear weapon or not, it relies on the United States, I think. So in this case, I need to add one discussion about the capability. Because I talk about will, but the capability is another matter. Capability to possess a nuclear weapon, what is the most important part? Indeed, scientist. Because scientists demand long-term education. So indeed, Japan has the capability built from the human resources in this case.
Yep.
Material, if Japan smuggle, it is possible to possess. So view from this, the official stance of Japan, we do not have the nuclear weapon, we have the nuclear allergy, so we do not possess. But reality is, indeed, Japan's policy is option open, I believe. So because view from the capability, they can possess a nuclear weapon within the some months, I believe. Because a nuclear plant is there, nuclear scientist is there, so only material is matter and will is matter. View from the capability, they can make it. That's true.
No. Yeah, but, I agree too.
Yeah. But will, in case of will, yes. We do not want to to harm the relation with the United States. So it rely on U.S. decision. U.S. Abandon Japan. In this case, Japan need to do something. But if U.S. will support Japan, in this case, Japan do not want to harm the relation with the United States. So that's why Japan will not possess a nuclear bomb.
Okay. So before we end the show, I want to bring out Bob the Genie. And as I rub my magic lamp, Bob grants all of our guests three wishes. Now, your wishes have to be related to the topics we've been discussing. So let me ask you, Satoru, what is your first wish?
First wish? This is very interesting and but a difficult question. But the first wish is, of course, I wish, as a Japanese, I wish the U.S. will win the competition with China. Because Japan is under threat of China, and China's political regime is not friendly toward Japan. So Japan want to stay in the U.S. circle. So in this case, current concern is U.S.-China competition. If U.S. will win, because Japan is U.S. side, maybe Japan also be the winner.
Yeah.
That is Japan's wish. So that's why the U.S. victory is a very important part of our wish, I believe.
Okay, that's a good wish. As an American, I like that wish. Okay, so that's your first wish. How about your second wish?
Second wish is, of course, during this U.S.-China competition, our damage could be minimum. Because the U.S.-China competition, if this competition will escalate, of course, there are many side effects we can expect. Currently, the tariff war has happened, trade war. And that is natural because China's power source is rising economy. So that's why the economical part is part of security. So it is unavoidable. But Japan's business style is they have already built a factory in China. So that's why we need to relocate as soon as possible. Japan has already tried it because compared with 10 years ago, one third of the Japanese stay in China has already left from China. So in the past, 150,000 people live in China. All of these are Japanese. But now 100,000. So they have already left because Japan is relocating. Risk diversity is my purpose. But at the same time, the economy is long-term process. So that's why they cannot leave China immediately. So that's why, of course, our concern is damage should be minimum. Our second wish, I think.
Yeah, that's a good one. I fear that if a conflict over Taiwan actually takes place, that, the Chinese will not stop with Taiwan, but they'll continue up the island chain to, Okinawa and the Okinawan islands. So there's some disputes between Japan and Taiwan or Japan and China over some islands that they may seek to take in any conflict. So minimizing damage is a good wish. How about your third and final wish?
I think after the U.S. victory against China, what Japan's status will be matter, I think. So during the Dutch kind of process, of course, if Japan gets a good status as a friend of the United States and follower of the United States, of course, this is Japan's interest, I believe. So that's why in the U.S. circle, Japan want to get some certain level of the status. That is a third wish, I think, because the U.S.-China competition, we wish U.S. victory. And secondly, the damage will be minimum. If the two wish really achieved, there is a possibility Japan can get some certain status in the U.S. circle. So, so these three are the one line, I think, and maybe it could be Japan's wish. As a strategist, I try to be. My third wish, I think.
All right. Well, that's a good one. That's a good one. Well, Satoru Nagao, thanks for joining us on NucleCast. It was a pleasure to have you, and hopefully, your wishes will come true, assuming we have a conflict, but let's hope we don't. So thanks for joining us on NucleCast.
It is an honor. Thank you so much.
And thanks to you, the listeners, and we'll see you on the next episode. Well, great discussion with Satoru. It's it's great to hear, you know, a Japanese perspective from somebody who's, you know, sitting in Tokyo and thinking about what's going on and how Japan is trying to navigate a increasingly difficult, you know, region. And so it was good to hear from him. You know, he's a funny guy. You know, he's fun to listen to. So that made the interview even better. So hopefully you enjoyed the discussion.
This has been a production of the Anwa Deterrent Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Grunfall. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.